First thing we're going to talk about here is clearing and what it means generally to man. If I were a newspaper reporter that knew anything about writing, I'd see something brand new, wouldn't I? And I were reporting on this subject of Dianetics and Scientology, I would trace it down into an area of common understanding of something man has been trying to do for a very, very long time. We have a record of 2,500 years of attempts at a breakthrough in the field of livingness. 2,500 years, man has had some idea that a breakthrough could occur. And I am fully convinced that he's gone into despair about it. It's hard to talk to people about this thing for the excellent reason that man is in a state of non-comprehension concerning his own actual beingness. And being in such a state, he is out of communication about it. Now let's take this up in this wise. You tell a prisoner who has been in prison for endless, endless centuries that there's a front door and that it's open. You know that he won't believe you. He won't even go look to see if the front door is open. Wherever man has been given promise, he's been given a slap in the face. That's also true. And this is one of the things that convinces him that the prison door is still closed and that there is no exit therefrom. Let me go over this briefly. There are four parts of man. Four parts of man. And in each one of these parts, man has been given, at one time or another, some hope. And after the hope, he's been given despair. The fear merchants have been at work. People have been digging his grave for a very long time. And the horrible joke upon those who dug the grave is that they dug their own grave too. Nevertheless, in each one of these four parts, a grave was dug. First of these four parts is the spirit. That covers the whole field of religion. The next of these four parts is the mind. That is practically unrepresented today, except in our own field, so perverted has it become. It's represented in something called psychology, which we will take up later. And then there's a third part called the body, or living form. And that could be any living form, but man egocentrically is mostly interested in the human body. He considers this far more sacred than a deer's body or some other type of body. But here we have the entirety of the field of bodies. That has been relegated to the field of medicine. Biology, genetics, and such sciences. About all man knows today, he knew a long, long time ago in those fields, and it's become pretty much a figure today. But nevertheless, that segment is represented. Now let's take the next area, and that is the field of physics. Physics pretends to embrace the physical universe and its various parts. And physics today is an interesting potpourri of we don't know anything about it. It used to be quite well laid out. It was for three or four centuries a fairly well worked out subject, and now has become extremely poor. Well, let's look over these fields now, and let's take a look at what has happened in these fields in terms of hope and despair. Now, first amongst these has been this one, religion, the spirit. And of all subjects which has been perverted, of all subjects that have been made into traps for man, religion ranks first. The things he has been told in the name of religion would be very laughable if they weren't so tragic. The first of these, perhaps a very late look, but certainly a look that we can investigate today here on earth, is the worship of idols and the worship of demons and air spirits. Every time man couldn't understand anything, there was always some witch doctor ready to step forward and figure it out to his own benefit. Every time this occurred. Every time the lightning struck a tree next to Ugg's abode, the witch doctor was always willing to collect a few monkey skins for preventing the god of lightning from smiting him further. Operating on the well-known principle to him that lightning never struck twice in the same place, he was therefore quite successful in malting monkey skins out of Ugg. Now, of course, I've talked about the highest tide of religion when I've talked about Ugg and the monkey skins. It actually has never gone beyond that, except in other forms, other phrases, other words, other mumbo-jumbos. Now, somebody will get the idea I'm an atheist saying things like that, but that is a handy word which says somebody who doesn't believe in God. Actually, an atheist does believe in God, you know. If he didn't believe in God, he wouldn't be so confoundedly adamant concerning God. Now, here we have the idea of another spirit, another beingness. And the whole of religion has addressed this whole idea of other spirit and other beingness. And that is all we have had. The only thing they have offered you, or the individual, is surcease or sanctuary with regard to another beingness or another force. Let's look at this. They say, you will go to heaven, or you will go to hell. Well, now, this isn't a study. This is a moral enforcement. They have come up with maps of heaven and hell. And we had a survey crew working here a couple of years ago, and we couldn't find either one. Hell of a note. If you aren't good, why, you'll go to hell. And if you are good, you'll go to heaven. Well, what is being good? Well, that's paying your tithe, that's saluting the priest, and that's making no objection when he makes a pass at your daughter. Wasn't that the Christian, early Christian ideas concerning this sort of thing? Oh, this is very crudely stated. Undoubtedly, there have been sincere men in this field, equally deluded. But when it came to telling a Thetan, a being, a spirit, that after death, he went someplace and was totally cared for, well knowing there was no such place, the first inventor of it, shall we say, erred. He constructed a gargantuan trap. And I imagine the inventor of that trap is still walking around now trying to find the name and address of St. Peter. You can see him now. Walks up to the Piccadilly Palace and says, is this heaven? You know, he's probably quite myopic. Anytime he sees anything that has some pearls on, he says, it must be the Pearly Gate. Finds himself in Soho. Finds himself down in Broadway in Greenwich Village. Finds himself any place in any place that you can think of and still wonders if he's going to get into heaven. Somebody had to give you a visa to enter heaven. This visa system was quite interesting. They had a whole area of activity that had to do with visa systems. There's some capital down to the south here. It was came after the Greek areas. Rome, I think, named places. And Rome was taken over, and almost its total income was devoted to visa systems, passports to heaven. You see? And the immigration offices of the FBI and the British and French and other things, French Surette and so forth, are all patterned after this one. Only they just give you visas to other countries. They're not so elite, you see. Now, here we have this fascinating field. I'm not talking about it in any very specific way, but it was a field called religion. And the word religion itself probably merely means the repetition of truth or some such thing. Its name as an item is itself lost, very badly lost, in the hinterland of nowhere. And religion pretended to cover the subject of the human spirit, but became instead a moral study, and which sought to regulate the conduct of the few for the profit of the fewer. And it had gotten bad. It had gotten bad. There are places that have become upset about religion. There have been civil wars fought over this subject. There have been people banished and thrown out because they said that only 19 angels could stand on the head of a pin, whereas it was a well-known fact, as declared by the papal bull of 10,692 of the saintly years. I imagine this happens on every planet, that only 21 angels are allowed to stand on the head of a pin, you see. And somebody comes along and he says the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost are the three parts of God. And somebody else says, well, that sounds to me like that's one part. And the Father, Son, the Holy Ghost being three parts, you now have just one part, and so on. And so they burn him for heresy. The barbarians sweeping down into the Roman Empire, for instance, in the field of religion, we know it mostly as Christianity. The barbarians sweeping down were almost conquered by religion until Rome found out that they were dealing in an heresy. And Rome found out that they believed other things. They believed, for instance, that various deities were also associated with Christianity. They brought along some of their own local gods, you know, Wotan and so forth, who I believe was worshipped within the last 20 years by some fellow who used to get mad over in Europe and we hadn't heard of for a long time. Now, this fellow, Wotan, was, of course, an earlier version of the later prophet. And these fellows who were the prophets go on back down through the years, and mostly we know them as laying down moral codes, except one. And this was Gautama Siddhartha, and he was in the foothills of Tibet about the 5th, 6th century before Christ. Now, this man came along and handed out a lot of truth. And it demonstrates to you that man is willing to buy truth, because all of Asia was civilized by the people associated with this fellow, Gautama Siddhartha. They call him the Lord Buddha, and right now, where they build statues and burn incense, and they've got it right back on the glory road of pie in the sky, and so forth. But for a while there was actually a bit of truth known. And all Buddha said was, you can be clear. All you have to do is assume a proper frame of mind and conceive mind essence, and you're... And he didn't much go beyond describing it as, you see. There was some way that you could walk around the things that were deviling you. There was a freedom to be found. That's quite interesting. There is a freedom to be found. But that was all devoured and thrown away. The Western world has hardly even heard of this. And we're not particularly beating the drum for Gautama Siddhartha. I'm just saying that there have been little breakthroughs along the line. Western world now thinks of Buddha as a brass idol that people worship. And the brass idol is mainly dedicated to seeking serenity by a survey of his navel. All right, what about this next thing, the mind? What about this next thing, this next part? What has been the past history of this thing? Well, as a matter of fact, psychology was originally what it is. Its name is psychology, spirit study of. But since 1879, it has not even vaguely embraced the field of spirit, does not admit the existence of a spirit, and doesn't cover it in its subject, and as a matter of fact, has no definition for the word psychology, according to the leading textbooks on that subject. It is now a study of the human brain. You go into a psychology class, you are at once told that you must study a brain. I find this fascinating. What does a brain have to do with psychology? Nothing. Nothing at all. What is the degradation here? The degradation is that somebody plowed in trying to look at himself and got stuck in his head, and he found a cadaver one day and split open the head to find out what was in it so that he could look and find out what he was, and he found some decayed brains, and that's what they've been ever since. You go to a psychology class and you're taught the parts of a brain. Now, Mr. Wundt, Professor Wundt, Leipzig University, 1879, is actually the papa of modern psychology. And Scientologists very often think that I'm kidding them when I talk about this fellow and what he dreamed up and so forth. As a matter of fact, it's straight truth and it's a matter of record. He was followed decades later by a fellow named Pavlov, who studied dogs. This, of course, had a lot to do with the human spirit, psychology. But dogs were found to be able to slaver. I could have told Pavlov that when I was a little kid. I was always getting a piece of sugar or an ice cream cone or something like that and holding it just out of the reach of my dog so he would slaver. Stimulus response mechanisms were the main criteria here. Stimulus response mechanisms. You stim and it responds. If you stick somebody with a pin, he squeals. And the explanation is that something reaches something in the mind or brain, and this something contacts something, and you've got it. There's nothing to that at all. You understand this, don't you? They don't. There's nothing there to touch, but everything relays. This is what this amounts to. They've got the whole of livingness figured out to be a series of relays. I find this fascinating. A series of relays without any terminal involved. Now, anytime you want to study this subject of psychology or the mind, as it was called, you will run into this fact that it is a terminal-less subject. Sight is recorded through the eyes and optic nerve on a screen, which then puts in a stimulus response action into the muscles to react. There's nothing there. Freud came along in 1894 and he said there's a sensor. It stops everything. You know, and the sensor halts the impulses, and then there are impulses below this level and impulses above this level, and the impulses above this level aren't stopped, and the impulses below this level are stopped, and this other machine or something called a sensor is what selects them out and tells right from wrong, and if you're a criminal, you have to go get your sensor fixed. But this became a totally terminalist subject, and so it remains until this day. It is a study of the brain, it is a study of nerves, study of responses, study of, quote, behavior patterns, unquote. You will find the great civilizations of Earth today believe in this subject with such explicitness. They believe with such devotion that enormous sums of treasure are devoted by them at this time to finding out the right stim to make everybody rest. They are madmen on the subject. You have Russia has got Pavlov on the brain. Now they figure out if all you've got to do here is get Mr. Pavlov's little textbook And if you kick a worker in the right place, why, work comes out of the right place. And if you kick him in the wrong place, the work comes out of the wrong place, or something of the sort. But it all has to do with, if you beat him here, he produces there. The United States of America loves this subject. Length and breadth of Madison Avenue is now chock-a-block with advertising agencies, each one of which has its psychologist. They got it all figured out that if you do enough things to enough ads, why, enough people will stim and rest in the proper order and sequence, and it'll all go off like a large machine. It's rather wonderful to behold. What they don't know is that people have basically a power of choice about all this, and they are hopefully saying, nobody has a power of choice. It is all stimulus response, and if we do the right things, we push the right buttons, then we have a perfect state, we have a perfect economic system, and we are all perfectly, stupidly dead. Now, that's what they hope, but that is not working out. Firms are finding out that advertising is costing them business. Don't ask me why. But the more ads they put in, the less they sell. In some firms, this is happening right this minute. Now, they've tried a hypnotic blinker system now, back of TV screens and back of movie screens, that say, buy Coca-Pepsi, buy Coca-Pepsi, buy Coca-Pepsi, you know? And it says this very rapidly, and everybody is supposed to rush out and buy Coca-Pepsi. Well, the first couple of shows they do, and in the third show, nobody even goes near the stand. It's an incomprehensibility. The study of the mind at this time has completely wiped out this thing called the power of choice. That's because it considers itself an individual study that has nothing to do with the spirit. You see this? It's compartmented itself and submerged itself into the brain, and it's wiped out terminals, it's wiped out moral values, it says everything must be punished in and established, and there's nobody standing there to say anything about anything. It's separated itself utterly from this subject called the spirit and the other subjects involved in this thing. So this is what you call an extreme compartmentation. It's wound up in chaos. Now you see where we're going in this lecture. The next part is the body. The body, as everyone knows, is a sacred object. It is worshipped by the medical profession. It is worshipped by the drug trusts. And is adhered to very firmly by nearly everyone on earth today. It's a sort of an idea that you must stick close to bodies. Bodies are very important. You need a body to communicate. You need a body to talk with, and so forth. And a lot of people hearing this saying, well, what are you talking about? Don't you? Well, all right. I'll agree that for them, they need one at this time. All right? We're not trying to wipe out all the bodies on earth. Wouldn't know what to do with cues. You could never make any cues up anymore, and the whole game of cue would be gone. Bodies have values. All right. The whole subject of the body in the days of Sparta had to do with exercise. Use it. Polish it up. Make it strong. And even today in the Scandinavian countries, and even over in Germany a few years ago, we had all sorts of things called calisthenics. And everybody was out in unison doing these calisthenics and jumping up and down and flexing their biceps and all having a wonderful time. And I'm not the athletic type myself. I find out there's enough stress and strain in living without just jumping up and down and flexing your biceps. I'm always requiring some reason to flex my biceps. That's a short-sightedness on my part. But we have Physical Culture magazines, and we have fellows standing around, you know, with their muscles all tightened up. And It's an interesting thing that the more they seem to worship this body, you see, and the more they seem to exercise it in order to bring it about in a perfect form, why, the more stupid they get. I'm not quite sure how this takes place, except as this. We get a concentration on a somethingness called a body, and we get a departure from a thing called the mind, and we get an even further departure from a thing called religion. We just move right straight away, and everybody worships the body, worships the body. Care of the body. This society is devoted utterly to care of the body. Whatever else happens to you, for God's sakes, put on your rubbers. Now, the supreme sacrifice is to be able to go out and lay a body on the altar of war. That's supposed to be a patriotic thing to do. Personally, I used to have a feeling about this. I had sentiments concerning it. I had expressed myself many times. I said that if you don't know anything about diplomacy, you know, and you have to fight a war, why, obviously, putting a body out there and making it shoot and that sort of thing should also include salvaging it when it's through. And nobody ever believed in this. They kept putting bodies out there, you see, and then they would never pick them up again or something of the sort, and they'd leave you in there firing endlessly. You're supposed to be the thing to do was to go to war and after that not come home. I used to speak bitterly about this. I remember telling an admiral one time that I had a date with a girl in San Francisco. It was about the middle of a campaign out in the Pacific, and I was walking up and down the bridge, and I was looking very agitated as far as he was concerned, and I seemed to be rather bored and sniffish and snappish to some of the men around and so forth, and he asked me what that was all about in a rather see here now, Hubbard, sort of thing, you know. And I said, well, I had a date in San Francisco. I'm going to be late. He almost flipped his wig. The idea of leaving a war, you see, and doing something else was not part of his thinkingness. You know, that something else could be important beyond sacrificing your body on the altar of Mars, you see. He didn't dig this. Neither does anybody else. Anybody who was unlucky enough to be sent to combat duty early in the war finished up the war in combat duty. Most anybody there is aware of this. In other words, you start making bodies confront disaster, and you have to make them confront disaster. Have you got the idea? So a body actually has many mores and oddities concerning it. One of the things about it is you must sacrifice one. You must burn one up. You must use one. If you're really noble, according to the Russian theory of thought today, why, what you're in there in that coal yard, you know, you're shoveling coal. And if you're really noble, you go on shoveling coal for the state, you see, until the body is totally used up, you know, and then they burn it too because they can serve everything. Now, in short, anything the body starts doing, it must keep on doing. This we're pretty sure is the basis of the cult of the body. And if you start doing anything to a body, you have to keep on doing it. The main thing about a body is that it must persist, it must survive. But, modified, it must survive doing what it is doing. Now, this is very peculiar. In other words, a fellow mustn't change his job, and he mustn't change his mind, and a girl... Well, it's looked on all right if a girl changes her face a bit, but not a man. He's not supposed to change his face. You know, he's supposed to be going on being identifiable. Everybody goes around with an identification card called a body, and so on. It's a big system that's been worked out by which we can go on doing what we're doing and keep the show on the road and all that sort of thing. And the high priest of the body has been elected in these societies to be the medical doctor. He is the high priest of the body. And he believes implicitly that if you just cut a little chunk out of that and graft something on some other place and shove a pill down the throat or stick a needle in a certain part of the gluteus maximus, that you're all set. And all you have to do is do that, and the diseases go away and the body recovers and it can go on doing what it is doing regardless of what it is doing. He has a childish faith. And this idea that if all you had to do is add something to the body, and it'll make it well, or you subtract something from the body, like a leg or a brain or something like that, and it makes it well. And he goes on an additive subtractive basis with regard to the body. You feed it or you physic it. You see? You put some new material into it or you cut something out of it. And he never thinks much in terms of form or aesthetics or anything like that. He gets his whole rationale out of some ancient ideas concerning the interaction of herbs with herb or something like that. We've got our whole idea of bodies is must be well, have to take care of, mustn't ever abandon one. Where is your identification card? The body is quite an interesting mechanism, but it is a mechanism. It has become, not because it was intended to be, a low-temperature carbon-oxygen engine of one kind or another, and it does burn up fuel at a low temperature, 98.6, and it does run on gases and so forth. And it's a machine. It's a biological machine. And it is part of the beingness of existence. This body is a fascinating bridge between the material universe and the mind. And the mind is a fascinating bridge between the body and the spirit. Get the idea? And these four things that we're now coming toward the end of here are forming up here into something I will show you to be a gradient scale of actual knowingness. The fourth item, beyond bodies, is the physical universe, and here we have the study of matter, energy, space, and time. There isn't anything else in the physical universe except matter, energy, space, and time. If we omit bodies, minds, and spirits. Physical universe consists of these things, and energy in certain combinations makes new matter, which in certain combinations generates certain powers and remains inert and so on. And this sets in certain locations in things we call spaces and so on. And this is a complete cult. It's the cult of physics. I don't care whether it's atomic physics or any other kind of physics, but the physicist has today inherited the physical universe and the rest of us are not supposed to look at it, you know. Now, isn't it interesting that this physical universe would be such a thoroughgoing scientific study? This fascinating thing. It's you take some little grains of this, you pour them into that and get some heat over here and something goes boom, you know. And if you take some of this and put it together with some of that and put it into a form and locate it over here, why, it'll sit there and so on. It's a whole bunch of doingness and put-togetherness and take-apartness and locateness, and it's quite a game all by itself. It actually no more and no less probably should be regarded no more seriously than a playground. It's an area that people move around in. It's a place for you to keep things in. You have something, and it exists in space, and you want space to continue to keep it in, so you kind of consent to this physical universe. You want to move around. You want to communicate and so forth, so this physical universe serves a purpose. But it has grown up into this fascinating cult of physics today. This is the day of the engineer. This is the day of the high priest of the drawing board. This is the day of the where the gods are all hidden gods with mathematical symbols to give them proper ritual. And men are so obsessed with this idea that when they enter this field entirely, they tend to leave alone the other three spheres of existence and try to explain everything by physics. And this becomes one of the most remarkable and arduous jobs that you ever tried to perform. To explain everything by physics, and we get this man from mud theory. What is man? Man is an electron that sprang full-armed from the brain of mud. And somehow or another, there was this accidental super-combustion in this tremendous sea of ammonia, and life appeared. And life actually generated from a bunch of virus that united to form a crystalline structure and that grew. And the physicist pathetically will show you some sort of a uniting crystalline structure that seems to demonstrate that life could grow. He'll add a bunch of chemicals, something like this, to the a test tube, and he'll show you that it'll all come together and it'll become some little additive structure, kind of pathetic thing like the Japanese make compressed paper flowers, you know, and you drop them into a bowl of water, and they expand, you know. Well, the physicist has the same idea, and he shows you then, therefore, he will say, incontrovertibly, and with total conclusion, we can assume that all life proceeds from matter. Now, we see that on every hand today. He says that life proceeds from matter, and that matter monitors life, and it's all a sort of a machine of one kind or another. And the physicist even goes further than that today and has taken his political role in the world to such a degree that he insists the only diplomacy is to have a bigger bomb and to explode a bigger bomb. Then, at the same time, he gets a conscience that he gets somewhere and that he doesn't explain at all by his science of physics. I'm going to ask some physicist someday when he's agonizing over the horrible thing he has done in building H-bombs or something of the sort, I'm going to ask him, just what fragment of matter and where on the valence chart do we get a conscience? Yeah, where does that come from? Because obviously, if everything is physics and that's all it is, why, then, of course, conscience is part of this, too. And he'll have to explain this out by some formula of balances and flows or something of the sort. Now, he tries to explain it all in terms of this, and then all of a sudden he goes off into God and religion and goes nuts. This is his usual course of existence. He goes mad. Individually. He's saying all proceeds from the physical universe. The physical universe explains everything. The physical universe gives us everything. The physical universe is the mother and father and the cousins, sisters, aunts of all life. And we are coming out of the physical universe. And we are developing from items of materials in the physical universe. And he'll say, you keep on with it and keep on with it. And all of a sudden, why, he'd fall on his face and grovel and chew the rug and so forth. It's almost that bad. And say, of course, we have omitted God. And you get James G. and so forth going overboard. These boys, all of a sudden, without any understanding of religion, they almost as explosively as they would like diplomacy to be, they go, and they're into religion. All right. We have then force, general broad spheres of activity, each one of which has to a marked degree been discredited, because not out of any one of these has man found any peace or any rest. And certainly none of these great developments have given him any freedom, and that was what he came to find, freedom. He was tired of being pinned down in the same rat race. He was tired of being squeezed into the same cage. He was tired of being unalterably grooved along some particular line. And he came to each one of these four temples to discover what to do about it. And at first, maybe, they gave him a little promise. And here and there in their history, each one of these things gave him a little understanding and gave him a belief that maybe there was some hope, but inevitably, each one of them betrayed him. We have religion, the spirit. We have psychology, the mind. We have medicine, the body and the form. And we have the physical universe, which is the cult of the physicists today. Each one of those are temples. Don't look at them any other way because they aren't anything. They're types of worship with different forms. And they, all of them, degrade into a worship of one kind or another. Here we have great states of the world, which otherwise have good sense, worshipping at the incense today of physics. They think physics can explain all of their problems, therefore they don't need a Secretary of State. This is really in their pitching. Force will do it all for us. We just organize enough force and we point enough force in some direction or another and tell people that if they aren't good, it'll go boom, we've got it all solved. And the reason they think that way is because they think people are this force. Now, there's that cult being attended and this cult of medicine. If you just go to a hospital and you pay enough thousands of marks or drachma or pounds or lira or dollars in, why, by some necromancy, you will be all well. And they carve and they add and they carve and they add and they carve and they add. When they get through, they submit you a bill and ask where you want the body sent. This is an interesting trap that man has got himself into. Early medicine held a great deal of promise, but for our purposes, as it is conducted, it is a dead end. Just as physics threatens you today with the destruction of Earth as its highest hope, so does medicine begin to betray. Now we take this field of psychology and we find out that it started out to be a study that was going to set men free, and now it's a study to do what? To brainwash him so he can be a perfect cog in the machine of the state. Well, that's very fascinating. And religion, its history has been run over and betrayed so long ago that we almost have no interest in it today. And the dirtiest trick that was played by the whole field of religion is to bring our interest in it to such a point that we would never again look at the human spirit. We get so bored with this subject that burned and cudgeled and beat and promised and threatened and taxed. We got so tired of it, doing those things, that at length that we would just ignore the whole thing called the spirit. Now, somewhere around here, there must be some knowledge, but I've just shown you the four basic fields of man. Now, there aren't any additional fields. There aren't any additional fields because you can subhead each endeavor, activity, or knowledge of man under one of these four fields. Just pick one at random. Pick one at random. You'll find that ethnology used to be a study of customs or mental reactions and has slid over today to be an anthropology. And you go around the University of the United States, and as a matter of fact, I used to be a specialist in ethnology. And I'd say, who is your best ethnologist here? And they head you over to the anthropology department. In other words, they're studying the ancient bodies of the race, no longer studying its ancient customs. Its mental reactions have been abandoned, in other words, and its bodies are being gripped. But each subject man knows can be categorized under these four headings. And if we select them out one after the other, we find that not any one of them alone has led us into any freedom or any truth. Alone, and regarded alone, they lead us into blind alleys. That's because we take, it isn't mathematically or arithmetically true to say a quarter, but for our purposes we can say a quarter. They take a quarter of existence, concentrate on it, get so lost to the remainder of existence, and so interiorized into this specialized quarter that the other three quarters trap them. As soon as you concentrate on one of these things exclusively, entirely, and only, you have a trap. Now, the way the trap works is this. There are four posts, let us say, and you get somebody to walk in and concentrate on one post. Fix it up so the more he concentrates on just this one post, the more the other three posts move in behind him and hem him in. Then finally he says, I feel like I can't move and I don't know what is keeping me here. See, the other three posts don't exist, but for some mysterious reason he can't walk through them. Makes a fence. And so, when he says there's only one post and there are four posts, he can get in the compound and he can't get out. It takes a balanced understanding and appreciation of the spirit, the mind, the body, and the physical universe to give man a freedom from these and a heightened ability to use them while free of them. And that is absolutely necessary, that we unspecialize. Therefore, Scientology is actually the first subject which embraces these four subjects and, admitting their existence, studies them impartially. Scientology is a unification of four broad branches of learning. It has an aim and goal, and the aim and goal is what we call you, the individual. We find out we cannot free the individual from the group if we only stress the group. See, if we only say group, 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 we cannot do anything for the individual if we never look at him. Similarly, we can't do anything about these four things if we only look at one. All right? In auditing, in handling a pre-clear, in handling somebody that is going forward to attain this goal, it is not possible for you to say to a devotee of one kind or another, has come to you to be helped. It's not possible to say and achieve success. All you have to do is conceive mind essence. And there you are, free and clear of it all. You can say that, but don't expect that they will do that. That's quite an interesting thing, and yet that is really the basic material of Gautama Siddhartha. Don't think that I'm downgrading this man. He's undoubtedly man's high tide in the field of religion. But all you have to do is tell him, he said, to just conceive mind essence and you've had it. And he said not to think of separateness and not to think of matter and not to think of this and not to think of that. And of course, the poor Buddhist today is, you find up in the Himalayas, the Lamaist. The Laman's the squirrel of Buddhism, you know. He's the fellow who took Buddhist material and went overboard in some direction. You find chaps around there sitting still for 20 years trying to think the right thought, and they just never notice that they are pinned down utterly in one, a mind, two, a body, and three, the physical universe. And they're concentrated so hard on being spiritually free, they never get out of the other three. Let's take this thing called the brain. Let's take the thing, you concentrate on the brain, Somebody comes along and says to you, now, all you have to do is understand which way the synapses snap, and you got it made, and you're free, and you can think, and you can control people, and so forth. Boy, that's fascinating. You're still caught in the body, especially. And you're still trapped in the physical universe. And spirit, just as a little experiment sometime when you're out at a party and a psychologist is talking to you and saying, I understand that you're one of these Scientologists. Just say, yes, can you conceive a static? Can you conceive of the spirit? And he'll say, spirit? What's that got to do with it? And you say, well, just conceive one. Get the idea of the spirit. Just get the idea of the spirit. And he'll get so sick, he'll leave you alone. Matter of fact, he'll become physically ill because you've distracted him from his specialty and thrown him over in here into a field which he is totally ignoring. You're asking him to look at nothing, since the spirit doesn't happen to have mass. That good, comfortable mass, that squishy mass which he is in continuous contact with in the field of psychology is the stuff he feeds on. And spirits give him indigestion. And medical doctor comes along and he says, well, you'll be free of all these illnesses and ailments, and all we have to do is remove the central vagus nerve from the stomach. You won't have a nervous stomach anymore. And if we just do a little neurosurgery here and then square up a couple of things, well, you won't be able to feel anything in that particular area. And if we amputate that foot and put on a wooden leg, why, you won't be bothered with arthritis anymore. And you might not be able to feel anything, and the body might not be giving you any trouble, but you're an economic disaster, usually, for the rest of your life. Now, that isn't necessarily true in Great Britain, unless, of course, you want real surgery, which you naturally pay for. They cut twice as much for a fee. But you see somebody walking down this line of medicine, trying to be well, and the longer they're at it, why, the less well they are. Now, if you take such a chap and you say to him, now, look here, old man, the mind is the thing. Just get the idea of the mind. Some people have something wrong with their minds. Well, he's heard something about this, you know. And he said, this isn't such a bad thing, this idea about the mind. He's liable to say, though, well, I don't know how a mind would heal a broken leg, you know, and he'd give you a bunch of witticisms along this particular line. Now, what you want to do, if you wanted to make him feel real bad, you'd have to call to his attention the idea that there was a spirit and that you couldn't operate on one, and this would break his heart. Physical universe, people go into physics to find out what it's all about, what everything is about, how it's all going to work out, and so forth, and then one fine day, why they find out they can't. They can't advance beyond a certain line. They feel they're all upset and they're emotionally disturbed and so on. And you tell some of these physicists that a few truths along in this line, and almost without examination, they fly straight out of the field of physics. They just go wham. Recently in the United States, a scientific congress, a member of, had been appointed to a committee, and he sent me a wire asking me if there are any demonstrations in evidence, or that I could give him fast by wire, to demonstrate that the spirit manufactured matter. It's just in so many words this thing came to mean. So I wrote him out and I gave him the experiment by which an individual mocks up, creates energy, pushes into the body and increases his weight, and then throws it away and decreases his weight. And I gave him a long wire about this. It was read to the Congress that they were having up there. And newspaper stories are out all over the place just now about how the spirit produces matter. Now, they have found the source of matter after all, the spirit, and so forth. I have no interest in the spirit beyond the production of matter. It's quite fascinating. Well, these four things in Scientology become the Thetan study of, and size and general dimensions, you might say, and the products of the Thetan. And amongst those products is the mind, and the mind is not the brain. The mind does have parts and it does have anatomy, but none of these things have anything to do with the brain. And the next point down the line is the body. And we don't know as much about the body as we'd like to, but a body is evidently a co-production on the part of Thetan, a sort of a mock-up, a perpetuating mock-up along certain systems, and certainly the physical universe is a created thing, a playground. And we know that to clear anybody, we have to give attention to these four things, and the drills and exercise Scientology are devoted to that. And just starting out this series of lectures, I wanted to point out to you, even though you're old hands, that you can get awfully specialized. And when you get so specialized that you pay no further attention to three of the four parts you must address, you can fully expect to be trapped one way or the other. And after that, go around mulling it over, mulling it over, mulling it over in your own little squirrel cage. Sometime you run somebody and you've got him thinking a thought and thinking a thought and thinking a thought and thinking a thought and thinking a thought, and he thinks, oh, 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 oh. And then you say, end of session, you say, and the chap gets up and he says, wow. He doesn't even see the walls. They're gone as far as he's concerned. Too great a specialization, then, is the proper way of defeating any further progress in the field of clearing. And clearing basically is clearing up one's ideas, one's efforts, one's contacts, and one's entrapments with the spirit, the mind, the body, the physical universe. And when those four things are addressed, and when we know thoroughly that these are the four things, and there aren't more things to run into, but that everything we're going to run into is subdivisible under these four, when we realize that our look has to be reasonable and not the look of a zealot, whereby we're saying, hydrogen molecules, if you just get your preclear to look hard enough at a hydrogen molecule and only at a hydrogen molecule, he'll thereafter be very happy. Well, undoubtedly, it's good advertising for the gas company, but it's not at all good advertising for you as an auditor, because you're going to fail. You get somebody too thoroughly concentrated upon one item, one tiny segment of existence. You get him to look at that and nothing else. And he will come up to a point where he can only look at that. And therefore he is trapped with the remainder. The first thing we must learn about Scientology then is that it is a broad subject, it is a reasonable subject, and probably the first unification of all fields of knowledge under one heading. Thank you.